At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Hello and welcome to In the News This Week, the podcast from some of the team behind Have I Got News For You, where we take you through our picks of the news this week when the TV show can't.
We'll be looking at both the serious and not so serious news items and trying to convince each other of which story we think would have been perfect for the show if it was on air.
Which it isn't. But let's introduce ourselves anyway. I'm Emerald Paston. I write on Have I Got News For You.
I'm Jack Harris, the sometimes producer of the show.
I'm Mike Raymond, sometimes series producer of the show.
And I'm Queenie Miller, the picture researcher for the show, which is obviously essential for a podcast.
Absolutely key.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Hello.
How are we all doing this week?
Excellent.
Thank you.
Where are you, Jack?
I'm in New York. I'm here for the American Have I Got News For You.
How's it going so far?
Haven't started yet. I've only been here for 2 days.
Nice.
It's absolutely pissing it down over here. And I've located 2 supermarkets. Yeah. When in New York, it's quite hard, I think.
I'm looking forward for this kind of insight into American culture and politics over the next few weeks.
I'm specifically looking forward to it through Jack's eyes.
Just looking down at everything.
It's quite a juxtaposition. You're not the most American person I've ever met, I think.
Who is Queenie?
Well, I've never shot a gun. Is that what you say?
Yeah.
Have you ever clapped when a plane lands?
Well, my own experience with that is on an EasyJet flight where they play in a clap, right?
Which we don't do on Have I Got News For You. You know how some people say we do have canned laughter?
That has always wound me up.
Great link to the show.
That's a good fact.
I'm in Edinburgh for the Edinburgh Fringe. And do you know what is a fun update? Liz Truss was here.
I saw the photo.
Really? No way.
I know because I have her Instagram post notifications on, obviously, because I'm obsessed with her.
She actually did a show. She appeared on stage because I think she misunderstood that people weren't laughing with her.
What show did she go on? Roast Battle.
911lizards.com, the stage show.
It was a 90-minute chat with Ian Dale.
There is someone doing a Liz Truss show where they're just doing an impression of Liz Truss, which I wish she went to. I think that'd be really funny.
Because Liz Truss put a picture of herself in Edinburgh and she's wearing a very odd outfit and very weird pose. But the comedian who's doing the stage show about them went and found the spot and took a photo in the same pace, doing the same face. It's very good.
Emma and Mike, you're in London.
Great. Let's move on. Let's get into round one. And the big story, sadly, this week has to be the riots here in the UK.
It's another one of those ones, isn't it, where we talk about where it's kind of like there's not a lot of funny stuff in it. But you've got to talk about it because it's in the news and it's what happened and it's involved in the politics and we would cover it in the show.
I always think like usually, you know, since you say it's political, and I suppose it is, but usually on the show, the biggest thing we have is balance. You've got to have balance. And I think one of the things about this is it's not about balance. It's just racist. It's just moronic racist. Mm. It's not even divided down party lines. That's how you know how clear cut it is. Because, you know, you've got Priti Patel calling out Nigel Farage for inciting it.
I know, right?
When you have to side with Priti Patel, we know something's gone horribly wrong.
Well, the Robert Jenrick was having a little dabble potentially it's not their fault. You think, okay, all right. We see where you're going down this line of trying to opt on that side of the Tory party.
So desperate to be in charge. He's so desperate to win at any cost. Mm. He said people should be arrested for saying Allahu Akbar, which means God is great. You think, but he said children in immigration centres should have the cartoon characters on their wall painted over. Yeah. Of the two, I think I know who should be in jail for what they're saying. And it's not the people saying Allahu Akbar.
Again, it shows that whole thing about the Tory leadership. They're all just trying to find a difference. They just want to separate themselves from other people.
You know, this thing, all the instigators went abroad. Because Nigel Farage went to Hong Kong. Because I imagine for him going to Hong Kong and seeing how the Chinese run it like a dictatorship now, it's a bit of a sort of like Disneyland political wet dream. I mean, no one gets to dissent.
He did an LBC interview and said, it's probably the police's fault that they didn't give enough information after the incident happened, horrendous thing happened, which allowed sort of misinformation to come in, and they should have come in earlier. You know, the sort of misinformation like from Nigel Farage, who said straight afterwards, I don't think they're telling the truth. So he thought, he's complaining that the police gave him too much space to make some speculation up, which you think is fantastic. You know, he's literally going full circle to go, well, you know what? If you'd have been better, I'd have been better. And I quite like Lee Anderson saying the problem has been caused by smug politicians. I thought of
he's
all the people,
king of the smug politicians.
So smug. Exactly. Such a smug man.
So to give him his official nickname, as given him by Ian Hislop, Leandertal. Yeah.
There was a really funny moment from this, which made me really glad that I didn't delete Twitter. But Tommy Robinson, he was tweeting about the fact that he's been getting so much love and support during this obviously very tough time for him. And he's shared some screenshots, and accidentally in those screenshots, there was a text from his lawyer, former lawyer, saying that she couldn't represent him anymore. You couldn't write that. It's absolutely brilliant.
Chef's kiss to that. And the right-wing press, they all piled onto him for inciting hatred against foreigners from abroad. And I thought, given most of the owners of those papers' tax arrangements, I think they're just upset because that's usually their job. I saw a great clip. They were doing vox pops. I mean, it's literally like shooting fish in a stupid barrel. Like they were doing vox pops with the rape. It annoys me they're calling them protesters, and I'm normally really on side with it, but they're not. They're racists and they're rioters and they're fascists. But they interviewed this racist woman, and she said, well, it's like the Titanic. They overfilled that with people, and look what happened. It sank.
It is quite fun, isn't it? You think, at what point did she turn off the film Titanic to decide that was the conclusion?
And then I'll go out and rob Greggs. And it's like, also, it's a film based on a true story where a boatload of immigrants, British immigrants, are going to America to seek a better life for themselves.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? Although it's quite a serious topic, you just try and focus on the stuff that is quite funny. Like I really enjoyed, someone pointed out that there was a picture of a guy who had a balaclava on to kind of hide his identity. He's also wearing a vest with a very, very specific, massive Middlesbrough FC tattoo on his arm. And you think, I have no idea how they'd identify that guy. You know, the most key bit of information you get is a custom tattoo.
Horrendous tattoo.
So there's one guy, he was spotted looting Greggs. He had about a handful of gingerbread men. There was a guy coming out of Lush and he had a gift box. And then he came out of what I thought was Carphone Warehouse with a couple of phone cases. And you think, he's going to have the shittest tombola. Also, going for Lush, they're going to be able to find them so easily because they're going to stink. They're going to smell so much that police are going to just be walking down the street and go, I can smell that strawberry bath bomb from a mile off.
Good luck using that in prison.
Yeah. Ironically, I think the Lush employees would be better at handling the riots than the police.
Really?
They're so forceful.
They do get in your face.
It's like being corralled. You feel it.
Actually, while we're on air and talking about the riots, I actually live in one of the areas where supposedly the racists were going to come and protest, and just sent a video of thousands, tens of thousands of people gathering in an anti-fascist alliance and just peacefully saying, we're not going to stand for this. I would like to think we would play that in on the show in some capacity, because it's important for us to show in a national capacity that there are far more people who say love Trump's hate and the fascists can go fuck themselves.
One of the interesting things as well is people abroad getting involved in this as well. And I guess I'm mainly talking about Elon Musk and him just posting and sharing the most ridiculous stuff on X, and now into some kind of war of words with Keir Starmer.
Yeah, one of the comments that Elon Musk made in this sort of spat with Keir is that there was one of the rioters, he couldn't attend because he had a broken ankle or like a broken heel. So he basically wrote on Facebook, yeah, you should go and burn a mosque. And that guy was convicted this week. I think he's been sent to jail. And Elon Musk shared that story and said that essentially the UK is like the Soviet Union because of this guy getting sent to prison for what he deemed as free speech, which is actually just inciting hatred. Quite simple to convict someone of that, but Elon Musk thinks it's a bit complicated.
I've got a theory he's sort of come out on the side of the racists and the arsonists, and I can only assume because he identifies with them, because everything he makes also ends up on fire. So, rockets, cars.
It's tough, man. People around the world, they sort of suffer from misinformation about immigration. Key person who's suffering from that, Donald Trump. He suffers from misinformation because he didn't understand what people meant by certain terms with immigration. And he said this week he was getting mixed up asylum seekers with mental asylums. And he keeps on doing it in his speeches.
I've noticed him doing that, but I didn't put it together that he's mixing up those two words, because he keeps talking about Hannibal Lecter, right?
He said this week they're coming out of mental institutions and pouring into our country. And he says this definitely just mixed up the asylum seekers.
Which is really dangerous for him, because that's like one of his key demographics for voting for him. The Hannibal Lecter thing's insane. He keeps bringing up, but I think he's talking about the actor, is he?
Talking about Anthony Hopkins.
He says the wonderful Hannibal Lecter or
what
something
a guy.
Like that, he said.
He's a great guy.
Yeah. I don't think we could try and follow the logic of his speeches, to be honest.
I love that there's so many different theories on this. Well, I read a theory that he's got Anthony Hopkins mixed up with John Voight. So the actor John Voight and Anthony Hopkins are of a similar age. John Voight is very right wing. So not only does he not mean Hannibal Lecter, he actually means the actor who played Hannibal Lecter. And not only does he not mean the actor who played Hannibal Lecter, he means just a completely different actor.
Just to tack on with another American news. I'm in New York, by the way. And
absolutely insufferable.
Already. So Kamala Harris picked her VP. Tim Walz. I was watching Fox News over here and they showed a clip of Kamala calling him up to say, let's do this. And they pointed out the fact that in the clip, he's wearing like a camouflage cap, which is key, they were saying, to like getting this kind of like middle America demographic. Mm. And like, they were like, that's the reason they picked him, because he's wearing hunting gear or whatever.
Yeah, it's like a Midwestern dad vibe.
Yeah, exactly. So I was thinking, if a politician wanted to get the biggest like block of votes from the UK public, what would they wear? Like if you had a t-shirt of the Queen, I think quite a lot of people get behind that.
What, in like a Sex Pistols way? Or in a like
or maybe ambivalent. So it could be Sex Pistols, could be patriotic, and then you'll get everyone.
That's actually very good. Right. Okay,
Or just one of Lady Diana, People's Princess. Yeah. I reckon that would unite quite a lot of voters around a person. Yeah. Or just a Greg sausage roll.
Isn't there like a Primark Greg's range?
There
quite
is.
Quite inoffensive.
That'll
probably do
Greg's,
the trick.
People love it.
Or the little brand sliders.
Mm. I think given how inexplicably popular things like Coldplay are, you really have to go towards the blandest possible thing to get the most amount of votes.
I
think I just have a t-shirt of just like, keep calm and carry on. And then there's a bulldog in Union Jack colours on the back.
The thing is, you say that. I think the bulldog might be taking it too far. Calm and carry on, evoking a kind of World War II stuff thing. Mm. I can actually imagine Keir Starmer wearing that. Really, that's like a proper...
Yeah.
And then people photoshopping the end of the keep calm, carry on thing. To be like different funny memes.
Hey, what, keep calm and...
Say your dad was a tool maker, you know, stuff that is.
Nice.
Keep calm and Starmer on.
Keir calm.
Keir calm and Starmer on. I think I'm having a stroke.
People often ask me what my regular London pub is, but that assumes there's a pub I can easily return to, so please stop asking that.
London Pub Reviews, written by Paul Ewan and featuring Tim Key. A Hattrick podcast.
Did you save my seat? Why? I'm at a completely different pub now, with different seats. Catch up.
Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to In the News This Week. Now it's time for round two, where each of us will share a news story from the past week that we believe would be ideal for round two of Have I Got News For You? Jack.
Hello.
Please tell us what story you've brought this week.
So I'm sticking with sort of US news again.
Of course you are. Is that our US correspondent over there?
Jack, are you in America?
I'm in America.
You haven't said it eight times.
No, I'm starting with an America story. So... there is a guy called Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who was essentially the third presidential candidate, right? Mm. And he's kind of rose to prominence slightly. He's always been knocking about in the sort of political class. He's the nephew of JFK. But people were really talking about him being this potential candidate because everyone was so unhappy with Trump and Biden. And so he's gaining a little bit of traction. And he's just had a series of just like absolutely mad stories about him. One of them being, just as a little aside, in May, someone reported that in his divorce proceedings, he said the reason he'd forgotten about something to do with the divorce is because he had a brain worm that had died in his brain and deleted some of his memory, which is an amazing excuse. Mm. And that kind of hampered him a little bit, but he ran with it and just was like, yeah, I got a brain worm.
The brain worm could be his VP.
That, yeah, oh my God, that is his ticket, me and brain worm.
Yeah.
But they'd constantly be saying, who's in charge, really? Who's actually in charge?
That's so true.
Brainworm would appeal to, obviously, the intellectual voters.
He's going for the Metropolitan Elite. Yeah,
yeah. Do you think he just meant his mate, Brian Worm, but he got confused?
In his head, that actually makes him sound even more mad, to be honest.
And he comes out and says, sorry, I meant Brian Worm.
But this week, he got into another controversy because he released a video of him confessing to dumping a dead bear in Central Park. Now, this is like 10 years ago in 2014, police found a dead bear and they were like, they had no idea why it was there. It was there with a bicycle. 10 years later, the New York Times find out that actually it was Robert F. Kennedy who found this dead bear. And basically, he tried to get ahead of the story by releasing this video where he said, yeah, you know, I was out on a falconry expedition, which, like, you know, just standardly what you do, found this bear and he was going to skin it and eat it. Again, standard fodder. You know, when you find a dead bear. But instead, he thought it'd be a bit of a laugh to drive to New York, drop it in Central Park, and make it look like a bicycle accident happened to kill this bear. And I just love the idea that he's trying to get ahead of a story. And he's like, I'm just going to squash this story by admitting to something which is absolutely mad.
As if he could make it sound more sensible.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, well, if I explain it, it will make sense.
Yeah.
In any other presidential race, someone admitting to planting a dead bear in the middle of Central Park would be the maddest thing that a presidential candidate has either said or done. But we live in a different world now. He's trying to out-Trump Trump, you know?
Trump could have already well said that and he's just plagiarised him. Because Trump's basically like the Infinite Monkeys, Infinite Typewriters in a trench coat. That's basically what Trump is.
The New York Times had a picture of him with this dead bear cub as if it's trying to bite him. And when asked by the New York Times what was happening, he actually told the New York Times, oh, maybe that's where I got my brain worm from the fake biting of the bear.
I'm joking.
From that, which I don't know if you said that tongue in cheek, still a very funny quote and we put it up. That would probably be quite a good thing to put up. Mm-hmm. And also his excuse for like why he dumped it in Central Park was because he had to go to the airport, but he didn't want to leave this dead bear in his car. Which again, I love it. I love that you're driving to the airport and you're going, oh, fucking hell, I picked up that bear. You have to do something with it. Which again, great quote to stick up. I think you'd ask the panel, what would you do if you had a dead bear in your car and you had to go to the airport? What would you do with it? Well, and again, there's no answer. There's no answer.
There's
you wouldn't
to say
have
about
a dead
that.
Bear in your car. You wouldn't have
my,
a dead bear.
My,
in your
brain,
car.
My brain heard you ask that and went, no, you can't possibly have asked that question.
But you know what? Now he's owned up to it. That's his cross to bear, as opposed to people walking around Central Park who had a bear to cross. And that's my life.
Yeah,
story.
That's good.
That's the sign off. That's the sign off. Emerald, live from Central Park.
Wow.
Yeah. Back to you in the studio.
So yeah, that's my little round two story.
Well, that was a waste of time, Jack.
Fair. Winnie's rule of terror.
The power's gone straight to her head.
Yeah.
Emerald, what about you? Which story have you brought for us this week?
Yeah, so my story is a very silly science story and it leads us into a few connected areas. My story was widely reported in the papers. But it's about the best way to stop seagulls stealing your chips, according to science. Basically, there's a professor, Paul Graham, who's an animal behavioralist at the University of Sussex. And the key to stopping seagulls from stealing your chips is pointing and making eye contact. So basically treat E.T. like an informational video on how to stop seagulls.
Was this from like Diary of a CEO? Is this Stephen Bartlett being like,
so,
no, I think it was actually from a BBC podcast.
So essentially you've got to be, as you're eating your chips, sort of wheeling around with your hand pointing out to make sure you're catching any seagull that could possibly be within the vicinity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I eat my chips normally anyway.
But to avoid dive bombs from seagulls, there's an extra move you can do. You can adopt a position that the Daily Star referred to as the James Bond wall stance. because they're really trying to make the story exciting. And that is where you stand against a wall for added protection, because nothing says 007 like cowering by a wall and covering your chips.
I like it being called a wall stance, where it's stand next to a wall.
Standing by a wall.
So this is according to science, but did they like test this? Did they get people to go out and try different methods?
Well, this story was so important that the Express sent a news reporter down to Brighton Beach for an article titled "I Tried Ultimate Hack to Stop Seagulls Stealing Your Food," and it was a complete success. So it really worked for him. I had to watch a video, longest 2.5 minutes of my life, of him sitting there on a beach pointing at seagulls.
It's funny because I was writing down possible stories for round two this week, and there was a guy called Greg the Seagull in Bournemouth who's terrorising residents. And LBC sent a reporter down to talk to people about their stuff getting nicked by Greg the Seagull.
You said a guy. Is he an actual seagull?
Yeah, I was so confused. Is it a guy dressed as a seagull?
Greg the Seagull. No, this is the name for a guy who steals loads of chips off people. No, it is a seagull called Greg.
A Scottish seaside cafe has started offering seagull insurance as dozens of customers keep having their toasties stolen. This guy who runs the Cheesy Toast Shack, he says that people who get their sandwiches stolen can have them replaced if they pay an optional 50p charge up front when they're buying the sandwich.
That's good.
Okay. I'd take that.
So how do you prove the fact that a seagull took it? That's my first, because I'm instantly thinking, well, I'm getting myself a couple of sandwiches here.
Yeah.
Oh, seagull stolen another one. Nightmare. Yeah. Why have you got crumbs all around your face? No reason.
I got one bite in. Yeah, you're basically getting a second toasty for 50p.
Yeah, what you do is you eat most of the toasty and then you just hold up the rest of the toasty in the air for it to be stolen. We did a seagull story, a round two seagull story.
We did. I remember what it is because I had to get the image from the guy, Frank Jordan, I think his name was. But the thing is that he made it into such a big deal. Like he got in contact with the paper, and the story was he had his block of cheddar and apparently a seagull came and attacked him for it.
Why was he eating a block of cheese?
He wasn't eating it. He was just leaving the supermarket.
You have to only have certain types of cheese around seagulls. You have to use cheese carefully.
Oh, very good.
Moving on.
Thank you, Emma. That was great.
Okay, I thought reaction to mine was bad.
That sounds worse, arguably.
No,
I actually believed it as well. Which story do you have for us, Mike?
I actually don't just have one story. Obviously, I've missed all the seagull news. And I'm not in the Big Apple like Jack. Or as Jack calls it, the Apple. So I thought I'd do a sort of series of smaller stories round up. But I thought, well, what we'd normally do with these, there's nothing there you go, oh, that's a round two. We'd do missing words. And we haven't recovered that yet on the pod. So I thought we could have a little game of missing words.
Yeah, excellent.
So your first one is, the Queen's son says what is one hell of a deal?
Free accommodation in prison.
I would love it if it was that. Probably would be a round one.
Whether the Queen's son thinks the Wetherspoons beer and burger is a fantastic deal.
Do you know what?
I've seen Charles in there before.
You're not far off.
Oh, really? Are you joking?
No, you're not far off. It's
Greg's. It's Greg's.
Yeah, Greg's when he's out with his mates writing. No, it's Queen's son says, meal from fish and chip shop in Bristol is one hell of a deal.
Excellent.
It's Tom Parker Bowl. So it's it's a classic bit of misdirection. He's a big fan of the meal deals you get there.
Did he practice the point and stare technique?
His butler.
His valet.
Yeah.
Okay, your next one. Woman who finds egg that what puts it up for auction?
I actually know this one. She found a one in a billion circular egg.
A circular egg?
It was completely spherical. But I feel one in a billion eggs isn't that many eggs.
That's true, yeah. You know we get through a lot of eggs.
I'm going to share my screen and see if you can...
Oh, bloody hell, Mike. Don't get too technical, man.
Just so everyone can Google it. There it
is. Whoa!
Whoa.
One in a billion egg.
They've just turned it to look at the end of an egg. That doesn't necessarily say it's... I need to see a video of that egg turning.
I don't know if that's...
Why are you so sceptical?
But I think she's putting up for auction. One went recently for... £480.
Who's buying that?
The race is on because apparently the egg goes off on the 20th of August. So,
what's the next missing word?
Cambridge man becomes local celebrity over his oversized what?
Aubergine.
Not an aubergine. We do like an oversized fruit or vegetable, but it's not that.
He's in Cambridge. Punt stick. Top hat.
Punt stick, nice.
I'll be honest, if you haven't seen the story, it's going to be very hard to get.
Go on.
Cambridge man becomes local celebrity over his oversized models of household items. So this is Steve, a retired handyman from Stanground in Cambridgeshire, who's one day, his quote is, after a prolonged bout of rain stopped him going out to play, as if he's a five-year-old.
Oh, horrible.
He said, I looked at my tape measure and I thought, I wonder if I could build this exactly 10 times bigger.
Is he okay?
Listen, we've all had the thought, but who's actually followed through?
And he's built a series of household items. Do you want to see some of them?
Absolutely. Yes. Oh, Mike, I love this media.
It's also really impressive that you're making it work.
It's great for an audio format as well.
Yeah, we might have to describe
them. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Oh, that's
awesome. So he's done a plug and a fuse.
He is beaming next to a plug the size of his torso and a fuse the size of like an airport-sized Toblerone. But what I love the most about it is that the comment underneath, how sassy and sort of like snarky the article or the journalist has been by saying, everyone needs a hobby.
Very harsh. Are you ready for your next one?
Yes.
It's the tape measure.
Wow.
And he's got an actual tape measure next to it just so he can measure the tape measure with his tape measure.
But what does he measure his smaller tape measure with?
That's a clothes peg, a giant clothes peg. I think that's my favourite.
As Mike kicked himself off the...
That was a mic drop from Mike. Like, big peg, I'm out.
I actually love that.
Yes. Instead of clicking stop presentation, I clicked leave. I really took a shit with my clothes on there, sorry.
Yeah, it's like the Gordon Brown closing down the lid of his laptop style.
The greatest end to an interview ever. Gordon Brown with an interview on BBC News. Former Prime Minister and Chancellor Exchequer Gordon Brown, thank you very much. But Steve from Cambridge, he said that men and women have different reactions. Men are notably more impressed. The men say, wow, that is out of this world. And the women go, where are you going to put that?
I quite like the gendered stereotypes of it, but I also like how much of the men's monkey brain comes out where they're like, big thing. And they're like just impressed by that.
Man-made big thing.
That's why Mike chose the story.
Yeah, I was just impressed by his big thing. And I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Thanks, Mike. So, my...
Oh, I didn't enjoy that at all.
My story this week, the headline really jumped out at me. And so I'll read it for you. An Egyptian mummy with a screaming expression may have died in agony, say researchers. So...
Nice. That's fun.
Basically, there's a mummy that's been uncovered that looks uncannily like the Scream painting. It's very animated. And they've thought about it, they've puzzled for a bit, they've had some funding, and they thought, yeah, this person was in extreme pain when they died. Well done. That's excellent. The more interesting thing is that they could have blamed it on poor embalming because they forgot to take the organs out properly.
Do you reckon the agony was down to them? She wasn't actually dead. And they were trying to get the organs out and they failed miserably.
Maybe. One,
just put it in the coffin.
She wasn't buried alone. This is a pharaoh from 3,500 years ago, but she wasn't buried alone. She was buried with her mother. So I assume that's why she's screaming. She's like, oh, fuck. Jesus, I'm really buried with my mother.
Queenie, do you want to talk about it? Is there a photo of the mummy?
There is a photo.
Oh, amazing.
Oh, wow. She didn't look very happy at all, did she?
She's actually the only person who was in the audience for Liz Truss's Edinburgh show.
I think she was reacting to that guy's huge objects. Like, whoa! That, about an hour.
Yeah.
Where are you going to put that?
It's the moment everyone's been waiting for. The results. So, Jack, which story do you think should win this week?
I kind of have a bit of a penchant for seagulls. As in seagull, daft seagull stories. I kind of like bad science, so I quite like that. And it's a summary story. A lot of people will relate to it. Mm-hmm. And also you've got the added thing of there is kind of like pointing out the fact that it's people are kind of desperate to talk about something other than the riots.
Emerald, what about you?
I enjoyed the many layers of Jack's Robert F. Kennedy Jr. story. Just the amount of weirdness, bizarreness, involved in the brain worms, the bear, the falconing, even the activity he thought was the normal activity is a weird activity. So I'm going for Jack's.
Mike, who's your winner?
Well, I did really enjoy delving into the relationship between you and your mother through the lens of ancient Egypt. Then I also remembered in amongst the seagull stuff, there's a really good seagull video I saw recently. There's this guy, this tattooed guy, and he's like a proper geezer. And he's walking along the beach and his daughter goes, Dad, watch out, the gulls. And his seagull comes in and he just, without taking a look at the ship, he just goes, bosh, just punches a seagull in the face and it goes off. And it made me think, well, we could like redeploy all these racists who just want to have someone or something to fight. We can just redeploy them around the coast to punch seagulls so that people can come to Britain and eat their chips in safety, knowing that we've repurposed racists.
Mike Raymond for PM. Come on.
So I give my vote to Emerald with the seagulls.
Thank you.
I was very tempted to go with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. because he's mad and he's a conspiracy theorist, but also like a really good environmentalist and an anti-vaxxer. You never know which way he's going to go. And I think there's a lot to cover there. But I'm also going to go seagulls. Can't get enough of them. There's too much good stuff in there.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Emerald wins.
I'm going to treat myself to some fish and chips and I'm going to
stand by a wall
and point at people, point at the seagulls while I eat them.
Thanks for listening to In the News This Week and thanks, Queenie, for bringing so much enthusiasm, vim and viv to the hosting
sure
role.
Definitely.
Long may it continue.
Thank you. I'm doing like a really pained smile.
I'm doing an impression of the Egyptian mummy one.
For updates on the show, make sure you're following Have I Got News For You on Instagram, TikTok and X, formerly known as Twitter.
You can also get in touch with us there using the hashtag HignifiPod or emailing podcasts@hattrick.com. That's Hattrick with two T's.
Make sure you're followed or subscribed to the podcast wherever you're listening to it now and we'll see you here for next week's episode.
Don't do it.
Bye.
Bye.
Awful.
In the News This Week is presented by Jack Harris, Queenie Miller, Emerald Paston, and Mike Raymond. The producer is Diggory Waite. The engineer is John Wakefield. The executive producer is Claire Broughton. And the music is by Big George. In the News This Week is a Hattrick podcast. Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Listen and subscribe to The Real Sex Education, wherever you get your podcasts.